This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the land of Grand Theft University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 8th day of December 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll also discuss whether or not ethanol can compete in a low-priced crude oil situation. Some are thinking no, others are thinking maybe. We'll hear what ag economist Scott Irwin has to say on the subject a bit later in the program. And then, as we close out the half hour, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with the guys at Earth Risk Technologies. And along the way, we'll hear all about the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they're finishing up in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. Things look like this for the day. Corn pit down 4 cents at $3.77.5 for the day. And the December contract, March at $3.90.25, down 4 3/4. And the May 4 3/4 lower at $3.98 3/4. July at $4.05 1/4, 4 3/4 lower. And December corn of next year at $4.18 1/4, down 4 0.5 cents. From the soy complex, nearby beans for the day, $10.43 3/4, up 7 3/4. The March at $10.49 3/4, 7 3/4 higher. In the May futures at $10.56, up 7 3/4. July $10.60 3/4, up 7 1/4. And next year's November soybeans $10.16.5, up 2 3/4. Bean meal futures at $401.50 in the lead option. December up $7.30. January at $370.10. Up $3.70. Bean oil 24 cents lower at $31.77. And in the lead, January at $31.85, down 23. Chicago soft red winter wheat at $6.10, up a penny. The March at $5.98, up 4. July 6.03.5, up 1 1/4. And the Kansas City hard red in the July at 6.43.5, up 0.25 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago for the day, December at $161.85, $2.60 lower. February at $162.35, down $2.52.5. The feeder cattle finished the nearby January $3 lower, down the limit, as all of the lead numbers were at $231.87.5 in the feeders. And the lean hogs on the afternoon in the lead, December at $86.70, up 10 cents. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check some of the outside numbers now as they're trading in Chicago. Crude oil futures at $63.19 a barrel, down $2.65 for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.08. That's 4 9/10 of a cent lower. And the gasoline on the wholesale RBOB price at $1.70 8/10, down 6 4/10. Ethanol futures, by comparison, in the lead option at $1.71.5. That's 1.5 cents lower. Natural gas in Chicago at $3.60 3/10 of a cent, 19 9/10 of a cent lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 17,858, down just about 95 points, that is. The gold futures at $1,204, around $13.50 higher, and the dollar index at 89.050 is down 0.310. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana Champaign area. This afternoon, a chance of drizzle. That'll all come before 4 o'clock today, Central Time. Patchy fog after 3. Otherwise, cloudy, a high of 40 degrees, west-southwest winds at about 11 miles an hour. Tonight, cloudy and a low of 27. Tomorrow, partly sunny and a high of 35 degrees. On tomorrow evening, partly cloudy, 25. And Wednesday, sunny skies and 34. Partly cloudy on Wednesday night and 25. And Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 38 degrees. Thursday night, cloudy and 26. Friday, sunny and 43 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Earth Risk Technologies.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It is a Monday afternoon. Let's turn our attention to the marketplace. Usually we talk with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities. He's out of the office this afternoon. Pete Manhart is there, and he'll take up the mantle for the day here on the Closing Market Report. Thanks, Pete, for filling in. We do appreciate that. Tell me about the marketplace as you saw it over the weekend and trade overnight and into today.
Well, exports were very good on the loadings on beans again, and that helped push the beans higher after that came out. We had been down early in the day there, and the corn exports and the wheat exports weren't very good, and especially the corn that was, after being up early, was down at the end of the day. So corn down 4 to 5, beans up 6 to 7, and had a high up 14 after being down 6. Just a mixed day. Good usage on the beans, worries about the usage on the corn, and worries about the wheat worldwide being a smaller crop.
Now, what are expectations, do you suppose, for the Wednesday numbers as they come out from USDA, in particular for world agricultural supply and demand estimates? Will USDA decide to change anything?
Well, they're looking at possibly lowering U.S. Crop size in both corn and beans by acres possibly and by possibly yields. That would lower the amount available and then possibly tighten up, especially the bean carryout. On corn, they could also lower usage of hair from the exports not being as strong as they had been. So strong usage on beans could tighten that up. Less on corn could, even with a little less yield, could be left unloan. And that's what people are looking at.
What do we typically see between now and the end of the year? We're getting pretty close. It tends to be a doldrum time. Farmers don't do a lot of movement of grain at this time of year, unless, of course, they need to for Christmas or tax purposes. But for the most part, the bins tend to be closed, don't they?
I think bins are pretty well closed. Decatur was over on corn last week. I haven't heard this week, but just to get their daily grind with the transportation the way it is, they were paying over last week in Decatur on the corn. But I think in general, farmers are done selling for the year. They're going to have to be enticed, I think, by better basis levels before they open that bin door back up.
On the spot bids, if they're over, and we touched that, we are at 377.5 on the finish for December today, so if they're over and they run, 380, 85, is that a place you'd go ahead and let go of an additional spot of corn?
I'd be looking at 390 to 95 and thinking that they would possibly go there because they were there last week.
All right. Livestock. What do you see in the marketplace for livestock in particular? They had a tough down day.
Cattle were down very hard. Hogs were also down, but not near as hard as the cattle. But hogs have already dropped a lot. And cattle, after being way up there, down, you know, close to the $3 limit at the end, they hit the $3 limit down. I don't know where they're going to close them, but bad for livestock as far as where they have been, but still pretty good prices and places that people should have hedged up here.
Does it appear to you that pork producers across the nation have learned to manage PEDV better than they have in the previous year? Of course, last year was the first year they really had a good look at it, but it seems that they may be doing a much better job this year. What have you heard?
You know, you don't hear as much about it, so that means they're doing a little better job managing. I don't know if they have any drugs that are helping, but at least they're in their management trying to keep it out of things, and appears that they're doing that to some extent.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time with us, and we do appreciate it.
Have a great one.
You too. That's Pete Manhart. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In fact, just today I posted another program from our Farm Assets Conference to willag.org. If you roll down, you'll see the corn, the soybean, and the cash grain panel. I added today the land values panel. That's on the homepage at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.O-R-G. Look for the Farm Assets Conference, and it'll be the first one in the list. Or if you tend to use iTunes or the RSS feeds from Commodity Week, it got posted into that feed as well today, so you'll be able to find it. It's with Bruce Sherrick. He's the director of the Farmland Research Center that's sponsored by TIA CREF, right here in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Now, here's Dave Dickey. He has today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, many of the world's top policymakers are rewriting their economic forecasts for the U.S., Europe, Japan, and elsewhere, betting plummeting oil prices will lead to an overall boost in the global economy by delivering a windfall to consumers and manufacturers. Officials at the International Monetary Fund, U.S. Federal Reserve, and European Central Bank project cheaper oil will be a shot in the arm for the world economy overall, especially countries with high energy tabs. The IMF is raising its forecast for U.S. growth next year to 3.5% from its last estimate of 3.1%, in part because of expected lower energy costs. Meanwhile, the National Association for Business Economics says it expects the overall U.S. economy, as measured by the gross domestic product, to expand by 3.1% next year. That would be the strongest GDP growth since 2005, when the economy grew 3.3%. Members of the forecasting panel pushed back their expectations for the first hike in the Fed's key short-term interest rates as well. Now, 46% of the NABE panel thinks the first Fed rate hike won't happen until the July-September quarter next year, up from 26% who targeted that period before. China's export growth tumbled in November and imports contracted unexpectedly, and a new sign of weakness in the world's second-largest economy. Exports rose by a weaker-than-expected 4.7%, down from October's 10.6%. Imports contracted by 6.7% from a year earlier. China's economic growth slowed to a five-year low of 7.3% in the latest quarter. China's November soybean imports were 6.03 million tons, down 43% from September, but unchanged from November of 2013. The January-November rate of soybean imports for China is 62.87 million tons, and that's up 12.3% on year. McDonald's posted sharper-than-expected sales declines across all of its divisions in November, as a fast food giant continues to struggle with competition and a host of issues across its business. Global sales fell 2.2% in November, and the U.S. sales fell 4.6% last month. An increasingly complicated menu has slowed service in the U.S. In the company's Asia-Pacific, Middle East, and Africa region, sales at existing locations fell 4%. In Europe, sales fell 2% in November. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming here at Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. I will be out of the office next week, by the way, and Dave will take over a good part of my duties on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'll be here on Monday and Friday, but still on the road a bit. The Ag Masters program is Monday and Tuesday. I hope to see some of you on Monday morning. And the Illinois Farm Economics Summits kick off next week as well on Monday in DeKalb. They're at Ferranda's Banquet Center. I won't be along on that one, but we'll catch up with them to MC that event in Peoria at the Civic Center on Tuesday, Springfield at the Crown Plaza on Wednesday, Mount Vernon on Thursday at the Holiday Inn, of course, and right here in Champaign at the iHotel and Conference Center on Friday of next week. If you have not registered for the IFAS, or Illinois Farm Economics Summits, today is your last chance to do that at a reduced reduced price. Of course, walk-ins are welcome, but the price goes up by $10, $65 today, $75 at the door next week. You can find all the details at the Farm Doc Daily website. That's www.farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Just look for IFES, I-F-E-S. That stands for Illinois Farm Economic Summits, and we'll have a really great lineup next week. We'll talk about the price of commodities, of course, with Daryl Good, discuss crop and income outlooks. That'll be whether or not you need to conserve some cash and how to go about doing that. Gary Schnitke will help out. And then the Ag Economist will turn their attention to the farm programs and what risks may face farmers, landowners, bankers in the future over the next 5 years under the ARCN PLC program, under the new conditions that have been evolving in agriculture in the United States and across the planet. If you're interested, these are morning-long events. They start at 7:45 with registration and coffee and run through the noon hour. And at noon, we finish up, but we do have a lunch available for you. If you're interested, the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, you can find them online again. Register today because registration closes this afternoon on December the 8th at the Farm Doc Daily website. That's Illinois Farm Economic Summits at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. One of the professors that will be out on those summits is Scott Irwin, and I spoke with him on Friday a little bit about ethanol. You know, the agricultural industry has been wondering a whole lot whether or not ethanol can continue to compete in the gasoline market, especially against the dropping price of crude oil. As you'll hear, it's just one of many factors that impact the demand for renewable fuels made from corn. There are two important pieces, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin, to unpacking the issue of how well corn-based ethanol can compete against low-priced gasoline. He says it starts with the market incentives to use ethanol.
In other words, is ethanol priced attractively so that refiners and other gasoline blenders want to include it in gasoline blends, because that's what they are. They're blends of various kinds of feedstocks because it's relatively cheap. So that's one question. And for most of the last 6 or 7 years, the answer to that question has always been fairly straightforward. Ethanol is a relatively cheap source of octane and oxygenate for gasoline blends, and so we go merrily on our way.
This is the piece of the puzzle that has come into question. Ethanol, because its price is no longer competitive, at least for the moment, has lost its market incentive. However, the other important factor is the governmental mandate requiring 10% of the nation's annual gasoline usage be made up of no more than 10% corn-based ethanol.
So what we've done, at least in the short run, is the market incentives, as of today, have disappeared. It's much more expensive than gasoline. So people see that and they want to start making arguments about, oh my goodness, does this threaten the amount of corn we use to make ethanol? My argument is no. So long as the ethanol mandate from the RFS is at or above the blend wall, we can't go below that level, no matter what the price of gasoline and ethanol is.
Think of it this way, says Irwin. When the market incentives are removed, the RFS safety net kicks in to keep renewable fuels like corn-based ethanol at a baseline level in the nation's fuel supply. For motor fuel, gasoline, that base is 10% of usage and requires about 4.9 billion bushels of corn to meet the blend requirement. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market at this point, and we'll take up what's been happening there with Brian Stark. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be here.
Well, as you heard, we had a discussion about ethanol with Scott Irwin and whether it can compete in the low crude oil price marketplace. Scott seems to think that, yes, that it can, but the safety net simply kicks in with the RFS and will continue to use ethanol. Does the Andersons have a different view?
No, I think it's pretty similar. I think, obviously, you're reliant when ethanol is not as competitive as RBOB or gasoline prices. You're going to use what the RFS mandates up against the blend wall, and then your discretionary blending, obviously, above that goes down, and you may have to look towards the export channels to continue to see stronger demand.
And so let's talk about both of those. Discretionary blending, do you think, is start to move away from this market?
Yeah, I would think so, as long as your prices for ethanol remain elevated. Gasoline prices futures continue to decline. I think we're down around $1.70 today. If you look back to the day after Thanksgiving from OPEC's meeting, energy prices as a whole are down 15% to 16%. And at the same time, in the last 7 weeks, the dollar continues to rally. So that inverse relationship continues to play a card in the energy complex. Interesting enough, we had a strong tech close in the commodity world, our commodity world, the ag commodities, on Friday, and that helped us a little bit out today before corn saw a little weaker close.
And then the other thing, since you mentioned corn, and we should talk about the cash grain market, there have been overs in the area that have been paid, and so there are some places that have spot bids that are pretty good.
Yeah, I would say your processor's market that's not seeing a lot of heavy movement, and I anticipate it's going to be a choppy movement from the producer until after the first of the year when they start to need to make sales for cash flow reasons. You're going to see opportunities for producers to lock in decent basis at that level, and we saw some of that to the south and also to the east, and I don't see basis weakening from a cash trade perspective, at least till we get past the first of the year.
Tell me about the piles you have left around the Andersons. Are they shrinking?
They're shrinking. We're in the process of reclaiming right now and hope to wrap that process up by the first of the year, so things are going well.
You wait for both piles?
For both piles, yes. We're continuing to create room and trying to get everything reclaimed, and so far everything's working out to plan.
That must mean you're getting trains fairly quickly. I suppose the dropping price of crude oil has freed up some locomotives to help move things around?
Well, the logistics have been improved and definitely better turn times so far, and obviously we'll continue to need to see that happen for us to accomplish what we want to get done as far as reclaim here the balance of the month. But logistics have started to ease, and I imagine that things will get better here as we move forward.
I know as manager you can take some pride in the fact that you're moving it that quickly, but did you expect to be able to do that so quickly on those that size of pile?
Well, yes and no. I think we're having to be strategic in the way we do things because, as you know, the state of Illinois, there's two types of ground piles, emergency-based and temporary. And temporary meaning tarp over with aeration. Ours are all emergency-based, no air, uncovered. So the state gives us 90 days to reclaim that. So we're kind of under the gun from a timing standpoint to get that reclaimed from when we started piling. So that goes into it. So far, the logistical planning or proactiveness has worked out, and hopefully we can fulfill that plan as we get towards the holidays.
And just your spot bids for the day.
Spot corn, we're $3.69 cash, and spot cash beans tonight, $10.29.
Support comes from AgriGold.
Thank you.
Their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Brownie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1730, Jan Ingelhuis was born. A Dutch-born British physician and scientist, he discovered photosynthesis by identifying that sunlight gave green plants the ability to take in carbon dioxide, fix the carbon, and purify the air to the benefit of respiration of animals. In 1765, Eli Whitney was born, inventor of the cotton gin. He was more important to the development of the concept of mass-producing interchangeable parts. This he applied in the fulfillment of a 1797 U.S. government contract to supply muskets. Whitney manufactured these in standardized parts for reassembly, meaning that for the first time, worn parts could be replaced by spares rather than requiring special replacements to be made. In 1896, J.T. White was issued a patent for an improved lemon squeezer. Also in 1896, Ernest Engel died. A German statistician, he is known for Engel's Law, which states that the proportion of expenditure on food will fall as income rises, that food essentially is a necessary good. And in 1942, Albert Kahn died, a German-American industrial architect and planner. He is considered the father of modern factory design. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. On the phone line to take a look at the weather forecast is John Davis. He's at Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago. John, it's kind of gray and a little rainy. Oh, almost 40 degrees here outside our studios. How about in Chicago?
Basically about the same, although I think we're a little bit cloudier and a little bit drizzlier than you. So about the same, though.
Looks like a November day, but it's actually December. It's kind of nice because a lot of December felt a whole, or November felt like December. How soon will we get colder?
Well, over the next week or two, we don't see any major Arctic air masses moving into the Midwest. We'll have some variability in day-to-day temperatures, which we kind of always get, but there's no sign of any kind of major Arctic air masses moving into the middle portion of the country. So really, it looks like the mild weather will continue at least for about the next, 10 to 12 or 13 days. There are some indications longer term by some of the variables that we look at that by month's end and going into early January, that will be a time frame where we begin to see a flow of Arctic air pushing into the middle portion of the country. So mild for a couple of weeks, but then it looks like we have some real winter after that.
On that note, can you talk about the Northern Hemisphere wheat and what kind of condition it is across the whole of the Northern Hemisphere? If there are places that don't have enough snow cover or might be susceptible to winter kill, what are you seeing?
This was not a good fall establishment and growth period across much of the Northern Hemisphere. We had problems across areas of the U.S., both in the plains and on into the Midwest. We had issues across the Ukraine and portions of Russia, again, with lack of establishment and getting that crop up before it goes dormant. We've also had dryness issues as well. So this fall period was not a good fall here for getting that crop established prior to it going dormant, which pretty much all of it has gone dormant here lately. And so we had numerous issues here over the last 6 or 7 weeks.
And then for the Southern Hemisphere, conditions for the growing crops in South America?
Very good. Actually, all the problems which we had back in November and in late October have really been taken care of. We've gotten the rains where we need it. There's no sign of any kind of hot or dry weather coming up, so a little risk of that over the next week or two. So South America is in very good shape.
I don't know whether you will know this or not, but I'm going to ask and see if you do. In the Northern Hemisphere, when we plant late, we tend to catch up throughout the growing season, maybe a week or a week and a half. Do you have an idea whether the same thing happens in the more temperate zones closer to the equator?
Well, I think in those zones here, in the areas where we had some delays, I think you do eventually tend to catch up if you get a break in the weather and different things like that. So, but I don't think there's that much of a difference within those zones here as to, you know, in catching up here later on.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Todd.
That, of course, is John Davis. He's with Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm your by extensions, Todd Gleason.